Good evening, everybody. Thank you for joining us. I think it's important to go about this VOD in a question-answer kind of way for a number of reasons. When it comes to pretty much all areas of our Avodas Hashem, we have the ability to look around us at other B'nai Torah, at Rebbeim, and we could sort of get a sense of what the proper Das Torah balance is. And I think that's what guides us in terms of a lot of our Avodas Hashem. You know, if you take a non-firm person and put him in the room with all the Sfarim in the world, and tell them, okay, read all these Sfarim and come out being the best firm Jew that you can. I have no idea what he's going to come out looking like, but he's probably not going to come out looking like any Orthodox Jew that we know. Because there are so many different aspects and facets of Yiddishkeit, and part of the Mesorah is knowing the balance. You take something as simple as, okay, they said you're not to talk during davening. So there are people that, you know, won't talk Ben Gula Tzvila. There were people that won't talk after Baruch. There are people that won't talk after Baruch Shamar. There are people that won't talk once they put their tefillin on. How do we develop what we do, what we don't do? Because we look in the Shulchan Aruch and we make a hashara of this. This is this level lister, this is that level lister, this is exactly where I'm holding, and this is what I'm ready to take on, this is what I'm not ready to take on. I don't think people go through that kan cheshvin, but they sort of have a sense of what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, where you draw the line based on looking around them. When it comes to the area that we're discussing tonight, Lakavod Shovvim, we're dealing with very private matters, which I think is part of what makes it so difficult to deal with, and what makes the Yetzirah be able to get in such a powerful way, because there's very little comparables that we have. A lot of it that we're dealing with is what's going on in our mind and in our private lives, and we have no way of knowing what's normal. And therefore, the standards that we set for ourselves, that we expect for ourselves, and the extent that we can be critical of our lack of perfection in this area could be very off balance. Because what are we comparing it to? We don't know where other people are holding. We don't know how other people react. We rarely hear it being spoken about, because most people shouldn't be speaking about it, because they themselves are too uncomfortable to speak about it. And when they speak about it, they'll just make the situation worse. So it's you don't hear about it very often. And therefore, the Yetzer Hara has the ability to seep in to a much greater extent. When you give a vod on any other topic, you have a much better idea of what people need to hear about, where the balance needs to be a little bit adjusted in whatever inyan you want to talk about. You know what to stress and what not to stress. Because you see, just open your eyes, you look around, and you see where people are holding. And you could address based on what you see. But when it comes to a vod like this, it's very hard to give a vod, because you don't know what people need to hear, because you don't know what they're thinking, wrong, where the adjustments need to be. So to give the vod, it's very kedai to have questions, because within the questions you could realize what needs to be addressed, what needs to be corrected, where the Yetzirah is getting in. And I think also it's beneficial to see the questions, to get a little sense of, hey, maybe I am normal, and that will probably help to deal with the Yetzer also. So I think that's a major toilus in dealing with a vod like this, with a question having a question submitted. The first question: does Rebbe have any Shovim related questions of his own that he hasn't found an answers for yet? Yes, this one. Okay. What? Most of the other ones are serious. Okay. What do you say to yourself after you were nichshol? Committing to never be nichshol again is setting yourself up for disappointment. But anything else leaves you feeling stupid and a bit hopeless, and therefore much more vulnerable to the next nisayon. Okay, good question. I think that what's kedai to do is picture yourself as a coach, and you have your star player, your cleanup batter is in a batting slump, and he's on deck, he's about to get out there. What do you say to him? If you don't want to get fired, what are you going to say to him? He's getting up there, bases loaded, and he's in a batting slump. He's struck out the last 10 times he was at bat, but he's your cleanup hitter because he has the best batting average on the team. What do you say to him?
The only way you can possibly get out of the slump is by keep on trying.
If you don't try, you're never going to hit the
ball.
You
can
do it. Oh, yeah.
So
what do you tell him to help him do that?
You're
going to
give him
the pinch hitter. What?
You give him the encouragement. Like,
so what do you say? Okay, how do you know he can do it?
I know you can do it.
How do you know? What? All right, focus on the positive. I don't think I would say anything about his past. You know that's all he's thinking about. That's the whole psychology of the slump, because he's getting up there, he's getting up to bat thinking that he's a loser. So he's much more likely to strike out again. But you want to get him to shift that mindset of, I'm not a loser, I have the best batting average. You want to get him into that mindset that he had when he was on his home run, his home run hitting streak. That's the mindset you want to get him into. He's just as talented, but right now his mindset is, I'm a loser. And you want to get him into the mindset of I'm a winner. The Yetzer Hara doesn't let us do that. Doesn't let us coach ourselves like that. The Yetzer Hara tells us to coach ourselves like this, that you're stupid and hopeless, and you're going to fail again. There's no way you're never not going to be nichshol again. And you're right, you end up becoming much more vulnerable. Because, and the Yetzer Hara gets in like this very easily, because we don't even realize that it's the Yetzer Hara. It's the Satan Me'acharenu, Hasa Satan Me'acharenu. You don't even realize that it's the Satan. You think it's part of the tshuva process. I'm feeling harata for my past avaris, but it's really the Yetzer Hara getting you to focus on the avaris, on the past whatever amount of times that you struck out. And Mamela, you're getting up to bat with the mindset of the batting slump. What we need to do is that we need to focus on the positive. Now, okay, how do you do that? Well, I think a big part of the problem is that I've spoken to many guys working hard in this area. And people keep a cheshbon nefesh. And they'll be able to tell you, I messed up this amount of time in the last week, in the last month, last days, whatever it is, however they keep their cheshbon nefesh. And I always ask, okay, how many times were you tempted and you controlled yourself? I don't know. Way too many to count. But somehow that doesn't become part of the cheshbon. Because the personal goal that the guy made up becomes his definition of success. So his goal that he made up is that I'm going to try to be good for X amount of time. And I messed up, okay? I failed. Now, is that how Hashem views you? Just because you made that your definition of success, is that how Hashem views you? Maybe Hashem views you like you're the 99% shooter that just, you know, that misses 1 out of 100, and that's what you missed. But the Yetzer doesn't let us view ourselves that way. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says that if somebody, let's say, is lazy, and he overcomes his midah of atzlus, and it's no longer a nisayon for him to get out of bed for shacharis. But since he's the one who created that, who changed the teva, he'll continue getting schar as if it was still hard for him, even though it's no longer a nisayon for him. Now, l'chora, you can make an extension. I'm not even sure if it's an extension. Al pi derech hateva, where should we be right now when it comes to these nisyonos? Growing up in the world that we're growing up, we should have access to kol davar aser in our pockets. 60% of our Google searches should be extremely inappropriate. And we should probably, al pi derech hateva, be nichshel very extensively in this avera, much, 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 much more than we are. Certainly the average guy your age on your Tuesday night is not sitting in yeshiva listening to a shir on how to strengthen themselves in these inyanim. How much credit do we give ourselves for that? Probably close to zero. But Hashem is giving you credit when you're sitting in the Beis Medrash at 9 o'clock at night, having no hirurim at all, no nisayin at all, you're just breaking your teeth on the tosis. Al pi derech hateva, you should be sitting on your couch board with kol davar aser in your pocket and looking at it, which is where most people like you are right now. But we don't give ourselves any credit for that, because that just becomes normal. We define our hatzlacha as, okay, if I'm not nichshel once in the next 2 weeks, then I passed. If I did, I'm a failure. And then we create our own batting slump for ourselves, and we make it difficult for ourselves to be matzliach in this area, because we view ourselves in a very krim way, not the way Hashem views us. In short, the answer is that what we need to say to ourselves after we're nichshel is go into that coach mentality. What do you do when you want to get a guy out of a batting slump? You don't talk to him about his failure. The coach who says to his team as he's getting as they're getting on the field, guys, come around. Listen, you lost last game. You lost 2 games ago. You lost 3 games ago. If you lose this one, it's going to be 4 games in a row. Now get out there and do something. He's getting fired, right? He's going to pump them up, and he's going to say, guys, I don't know what happened last game. Some whatever, I don't know, but you guys could kill them, right? We were in practice. You saw their moves. You're twice the size. You could kill them. They're meaningless. They're nothing. And getting in that mindset is a tremendous, tremendous tachbula as well. When we're in the mindset of we got this, it's a million times easier to actually get it. I think there's some chazal. I don't know where it is. I heard it. I heard it referenced that trying to understand why is it when it comes to relatives, in most situations, there's no taiva. When it comes to close relatives, a sister, a mother, why is there all of a sudden no taiva?
Familiarity.
A girl who you hang out with a lot is less of a chance of you doing something with her.
She's foreign from you.
What?
She's still foreign. She's like foreign from you. She's like interesting, mysterious, and her a bit of a girl. My mom I grew up with. I didn't grow up with this girl. Things that are outside, things that are foreign to you, you find interesting, attractive.
Okay, so the next door neighbor that you knew since she was 2, no time?
Maybe not.
So I think the Chazal say that Pshat is, it's a very fascinating idea, but Pshat is that since it's so socially unacceptable for such a thing to happen, you don't have a Havamina of getting involved in that way. And Mamelo, there's no taiva. It's mamash all in the mind. Al pi derech hateva, there should be taiva. But since in your mind there's no how I'm going to do such a thing, then it becomes the only sign. You know, Ke'enze, I may have mentioned this, I really like the hair from it. I was talking to a guy who was here over the summer once, and he was staying by himself, had a car, and he was telling me that every single night he had an unbelievable nisayon to just go into that car and go to places that he really, really shouldn't be going to. And it was he was exploding with the temptation, crazy nisayon. So I asked him, okay, so what happens Friday night? He said, I'm not going to drive. I said, on Shabbos? Like, I said, okay, but how do you deal with any sign? He's like, there's no any sign. I'm not going into the car on Shabbos. But he wasn't battling on Shabbos. It was the same temptation. But he had no havamina that he was going to do it, and the battle was gone. So getting ourselves in the right positive mindset of I got this, I'm good, I'm the 99% shooter, the guy who views himself as a really good ball player but just wants to get a little bit better, he's the one who's practicing his foul shot. The guy who views himself as you know, whatever, just okay, I'll get on the court when I get on the court, but otherwise I'm not in the game. We have to really change our mindset and how we view ourselves, which will probably be a little bit closer to the way Hashem views us. We'll feel much better about the battles that we're doing. We'll be able to create a much stronger mindset that no, I'm not doing it. The koach ha-dimyon of the Yetzirah that just gets us into this frenzy that we just get caught up with and not able to logically not able to be to logically break out of. The more we could create the mindset of I'm good at this game. Hashem is very proud of me. I'm one of his, you know, I'm on his starting five team when it comes to these things. It gets us in a much healthier mindset and easier to deal with it.
So the really sore person would not get depressed. If he had such a mindset. Would that be a better? Would it be more productive in his ultimate overcoming the Teva?
Liatzura would be better. Would be better.
I'm saying Liatzura, a person would not get depressed over the fact that he thinks he views himself as failing. I mean, if a person could live with himself viewing himself as failing, without even focusing on the positive, would that be more effective in regards to his ability to overcome and now fight the title?
If there's a lot more that would go with that Liyitzur, right? Liyitzur, you wouldn't feel bad about doing it, then probably wouldn't motivate you to...
No, you feel bad about doing it, but you don't get depressed with the knowledge that you are a failure.
See, when you use the word depression, nobody listens to you. Because nobody thinks they're depressed. But yet, everybody has a hard time battling the Yetzirah shortly after the Nichshol. The next day is much more difficult. But nobody's depressed. So we don't like using the word depressed. But there. Okay, go ahead.
Say, isn't the whole issue, the whole question, the premise of the question was, I'm gonna end up failing if I commit to everything. Mm-hmm. If I only do another thing, I'll feel stupid. If I'm willing to keep on doing the vera, I feel stupid. What does it mean? I feel stupid. It means that I keep on. I'm upset that I keep. The Rebbe's whole thing was that you don't have the score correct. That was Rebbe's whole premise, that you don't know what the score is in Shemayim. Say, what's the problem? Let's say I'm on my records. That I think that I'm a failure. I say, what's the emotion I'm feeling? Feeling depression, or the fact that I'm not succeeding? That
I understand. What's the difference? Depression doesn't help us. So what?
Isn't the whole thing?
Both of them are practical. Why are we talking to you, sir?
What? I was having an argument with someone about that. But I was
all right, we're not here for the lumdus. We're here for the practical.
I was gonna say, wouldn't it be better in a perfect world that if you could just grab the bull by the horns and then just run with it? Even I know I'm a terrible person, but I got to work on myself. Wouldn't that be much better if you're able to completely view it in its fullest extent?
The way I'm viewing it is closer to the MS. I'm not telling you to fool yourself. You're fooling yourself. That's closer to the perfect world. That's how Hashem's viewing you. The Satan is getting you to view it the way you want to view you, and that's Krum.
Everybody knows that based on the Rabbi Yisrael, that that's how Hashem views it?
Based on my years and years of training in Das Torah. Okay, let's move on here.
I think you lost that argument.
I don't know what you're saying. I agree with you. You should be, and you are. But why aren't you giving yourself credit for being in that place, for putting yourself in that situation where you're being held to that standard? That you got you there. Don't you have plenty of friends that didn't get there? You're just saying, well, I'm Ben Torah, so I should be held to that other standard, so I get no credit for it. I agree with you, but you get the credit for it. Who got you to that level where you're being held to the higher standard? You got yourself there. So pat yourself on the back, give yourself credit, feel like you're in the major leagues, and you're working to get a little better. You're working to boost your average from a 375 to a 400. You'll feel much better about yourself. That's closer to the MS, and you'll be matzliach. The Sultan doesn't want you to do that. Yeah, no one's here. I mean, at the moment, we have 30 guys in the room and nobody's watching anything inappropriate. That's pretty good. All right. Why are we not making a Shmiras HaRis and Center program? If you don't understand what I mean, here's an example. 1 month, no sin. Again, there's the Eitz Hara. 1 month, no sin, I get a steak dinner. Okay, so this is a very tricky question because again, the Eitz Hara is getting to this guy. He decided that what his Hatzlacha is 30 days, no sin, whatever his definition of sin is. That's what he decided. I get it. I get a steak dinner. I don't. I'm a loser. That's what's going through this guy's mind. There are places that they have these big get-togethers, and everybody makes a kabbalah together that we're not going to be nichshol for 30 days. I never got the impression from my rabbi that's the way to go about these things. Somebody was just telling me that they have a group of guys. Their incentive is that they all put money in the pot, and at the end of the week, anyone who wasn't nichshol, they get to split the pot. I don't think that's good. I do think that you need someone to talk to about the challenges that you're going through, but a major way of dealing with these challenges is by getting your mind off it. It's not helpful to have the stats of all your friends, like, man, I was just nervous. Like, you don't need to know that. That's not good for you. The way you deal with this, like somebody said, he didn't want to hear, is by changing the channel. Every time you hear that, every time you're dealing with another guy that's coming to you and you're working with, you're tuning into the channel, and it's and then, oh, you were initial. What happened? Oh, I'll tell you what happened. I was walking down the street. Yeah, let me tell you what I saw. No, that's what happens. That's what happens in these conversations, and it's very damaging. We're, at this stage in life, to take on the responsibility of helping somebody else through their nisyonos is a dangerous thing. If somebody wants to make a tachbula for himself, that's wonderful. The concept of streaks, I don't like it. I never really heard of it in any other area. Right? We try to daven with kavana. Does anybody remember last Tuesday by mincha how their kavana was? What happened to the cheshbon and nefesh?
I know the pashtus.
What?
I know the pashtus.
Okay, and it doesn't bother you. But I happen to think that the mahalach of focusing on streaks, when it comes to any other area of Avodas Hashem, we don't have that tachbul. I'm sitting out the Seder, I'm trying not to battle, so I'm gonna try to have a shtark Seder. I'm gonna try for the next 30 days not to battle. I don't know. When it comes to any other Nisayan, we don't work in streaks. Somehow here people tend to work in streaks. I suspect that it's because they do it themselves without hadracha, and it's a dangerous thing, especially when the streak gets broken, because then you're starting from scratch. You're not starting from scratch. You missed a shot. You're not starting from scratch, but that's how people view it. My goal was 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, whatever it is. People have all different sorts of goals, and then when they mess up, they're back to zero, and that's how they view themselves. Yeah, you make a Kabbalah. I was a Kabbalah myself a streak today, yesterday. keep on going. I'm saying you need Hadracha to know what kind of Kabbalahs to make. I could hear making Kabbalahs in these areas. I'm gonna make, you know, someone was asking for Tachbulas. There was a question in here about tachbulas of going home for vacation. I'm going to make a Kabbalah that, as uncomfortable it is, I'm going to speak to my father before I go home and ask him to please put a password on the internet. That's not good for me. I'm going to make a Kabbalah that I'm not going to go to bed until I'm actually tired. You know, you could make Kabbalahs that will help. That will help in the area. I'm gonna have a Musa Seder every day to tell myself how wonderful I am, and how awesome I am in my Avodas Hashem. There are lots of different Kabbalahs that a person can make that could be mechazik in these areas. But the idea of streaks of I'm gonna be good for X amount of time, I think lends itself to very negative feelings and false ideals. That I don't know exactly what they do, but I don't think it's this.
They have the buddy system, whatever.
But it's together with all sorts of that kind of stuff. It's together with the coach. It's together with chizik. It's together with conversation. It comes along with a lot more.
So if you should do that, that'd just be very weird.
And it could be also when you're dealing with an addiction. It could be when you're dealing with an addiction. It could be that you need different different mahalim also. It could be. It could be. It could become that, but
it would work more so if for addiction. It works, and not for it would work for addiction.
They have their system set up. What happens when you fail? They have their mentors in place, and it's not.
I think that's how we should do it.
Yeah. Get. What?
That sounds pretty broken. Then you have an organized thing of how to overcome challenges in life. That's pretty beneficial, no?
So if it's done right, yes.
So the way AA meetings do it is not right.
I mean, I don't want to say if I've been to one. No, I haven't been to it. Yet. Okay, I don't know exactly how they do it, but in terms of dealing with this, I don't think guys should get together and make a group. Okay, we're working on our Tavis Nashim together. I don't think that's a good idea. What? Because that'll probably be Ma'or or Taiva. I don't know if it'll be Ma'or or Taiva more than it'll help, but the better way to do it is with somebody that you're not that you're not being
right
being Ma'or or their Taiva.
And you learn that he sounds Ksuvus and like.
Okay, somebody actually put in that question. The my understanding is somebody put in that question, why aren't we concerned about Hiram when talking about when learning different sugyas in Ksuvus? Okay, so I think that the answer is that the issue of Hihurim is thinking about these things in a provocative way. I don't think I'm turning anybody on. I hope not.
Why is this less provocative than where we argue with you about the AA type of meetings or whatever?
Because I think it's different when you're dealing with a Rebbe. Who would you be more comfortable talking to about it, your friend or a Rebbe? One second. Right. When it becomes a normal thing, the guard is let down, you start joking around, and the conversations end up becoming provocative and have a negative impact also. You need to have somebody to go to as a mentor. It's amazing how that works. I think it works in a number of different ways, but we need chizuk. In all our areas of Avodas Hashem, we have people that are proud of us when they see our success. We have people that are machshav us more when they see our success. And that's very helpful to us to be successful. Having a mentor, somebody that you could go to and say, Rabbi, yesterday I had a huge taiva and I was miskaber. Knowing that you could have that conversation tomorrow morning, knowing that you spoke to your Rebbe about this and he's going to ask you, "Nu, how you doing?" That itself is a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous tachbula. Having a Rebbe to call b'shas ma'isa is a huge tachbula. It's a pella how it works. I've had situations where, based on the guidance of Rabbi Trapper, I've actually set this up with Talmidim. Call me if you're having a rough time, and a guy will call me, and I'll be like, okay, what am I supposed to tell him? And I said, thank you so much for calling. What's going on? He says, Rebbe, I'm dealing with such a crazy type right now. I don't know what to do. I'm like, wow, that must be really rough. And it's amazing that you're calling and fighting this, and you know, thank you so much for giving me a chelek in your avodas Hashem. It really means a lot to me. I'm so impressed that you're so comfortable. I'm like, okay, what else am I supposed to tell him? The guy's dying on the other end, like, and you know, then you get to the uncomfortable silence, and he's like, okay, Rebbe, thank you very much, bye. And then the next morning, I'll text him, okay, Nusa, how you doing? He's like, wow, you saved me last night with that phone call. I'm like, what did I do? And I didn't do anything. But what I think a big part of the pshat is that what the Yetzirah is doing to us doesn't make any sense either. But we just get caught up in this illogical craze that we can't break out of. And when you have someone to call, when you have someone to talk to, it gives you the ability to like come back down to earth and be a little bit sichliistic and realize that you're dealing with the koach hadimyon and not something that's just like unbelievable and just so overbearing, and you have the ability to come to your senses and deal with it. So I do think it's important to have somebody, but I think it's not right to have somebody who's just another guy in yeshiva dealing with it. You have to have somebody who knows what to say. I was talking to a guy who has his mentor, and his mentor advised him that what you should do is that listen, you'll never be over a shu'a d'oraisa, right? So you should take a shu'a d'oraisa. He gave him a shir, I'm not joking. He gave him a shir to listen to on how exactly to make a shu'a d'oraisa so it actually has a chalost in shu'a d'oraisa, so he can know exactly what to do, and make the shu'a d'oraisa together with your Kabbalah. And now you know that you're not going to be nichshol. So you have to know who to talk to. Otherwise, you start doing crazy things, and you end up going to Gehenna for even more things. But but it's dangerous just to talk to guys. First of all, they don't know what to tell you. They don't know what to focus on. They don't know what to not focus on. They're dealing with the same nisyonos. Where the discussions itself could be provocative, even if you yourself don't find them provocative. They could be provocative, and it's not advisable to talk to other guys about it. It's much more advisable to talk to a Rebbe.
It helps to talk it over with someone about the site itself, or just talk to someone. Can you just call someone and choose?
Well, that could also help. Just that's also a big tachbula. Just distracting yourself by talking about something else. There was a guy called me. He's having a very, very, very difficult time. So I said, I knew it was before, I don't know, a big Shabbaton or something. I don't know what was going on. I don't remember exactly. So I told the guy, why don't you go into the kitchen? The guy was a nice guy. Ask Mr. Stahl if he needs some help. It was Thursday night or something like that. Mr. Stahl was here later night. It was before Yontif, I don't remember. Go ask Mr. Stahl if you need some help and help him out in the kitchen. He went and did that. Just good distraction. I told the guy, listen, could you prepare a little shear and come to my class tomorrow and give it? 10-minute Moshe Shir is something inspiring. Can you do that now? The guy went and did it, and it's a total game changer, because you get out of that just being enveloped by, I must have this. You distract yourself, and it could be very helpful. Is there an issue if I think I know who I want to get married to? Yes, no, and explain, please. At some point, you should know. But usually these thoughts go together with, what am I going to do with this person when I get married to her? And therefore, it's not an ideal thought to focus on. And if you cannot focus on it, it's definitely better. Why don't we hold you should get married early, even if you have herm and occasional wet dreams? How far should one go to prevent a mikra lila, a wet dream? It's not ideal to get married to solve problems, because being married has many challenges that come along with it. And if you're getting married to solve problems, that's probably not a good situation. And there may, I'm not postulating that there's never a situation where a person shouldn't get married to help him deal with his or her. There may be a situation like that, and you should ask a shaila if you think that may be the situation. But in general, that's not the etza. That's not a good etza. Getting married is not necessarily a solution to the type of problems. It's helpful. There's a svara of pas basalo. But it's not a solution to the type of problems, and not really beneficial to use that as a solution. I don't think that a person has a chiv to use that as a solution. Just there are other areas that become nisyonos when a person gets married, when he's not ready to get married. And if he's not ready to get married, it's not really an etza. How far should one go to prevent mikra lila? I don't think we do anything to prevent mikra lila. There's an issue to have a herm. Herm could cause a wet dream. The wet dream, let's put it this way. I heard a pretty radical thing from Rabbi Trapper, B'Shem, the Rosh Hashiva. And he said as follows. He said that a person could actually use the possibility of a wet dream as a tachbula to help him deal with his Yetzirah. And he could tell himself that often the way people's bodies work is that when they don't get the release that they're craving, they'll end up having a wet dream. And he would say that the wet dream could be even more exotic and enjoyable than what you could imagine and do for yourself. So control yourself. You'll get the release in a dream. The impression I got from that if a person is not bedafka having herm, of course you got to avoid having herm, but a person could very possibly have a wet dream without bringing it upon himself. And I don't think that there's a focus on bedafka trying to avoid that or having tainus on yourself for having one. If I cared, Rabbi Trapper was saying that a person could actually use that as something to look forward to. If I control myself, maybe I'll have one and I could get the release that way. But what a person needs to avoid is a person needs to avoid the herm. So the extent that a person should go is the same extent that a person should go to avoid herm. But I don't think that a person should be having tainus on himself for these things. Let's take a vote here. We could continue for a while, or we could stop now and daven Maariv and continue on a different fad. Anybody wants to continue now? Anybody wants to stop in that marv? Okay, you want to go to that marv? Can you do me a favor? Can you tell him not to wait for us? Anyone who wants to go to that marv is dismissed. I'm guessing we'll go for another 15-20 minutes. And we'll have another marv here.
That's it.
What?
That's it.
We'll continue a different time.
So the last night.
And we didn't? No?
Rabbi Trapper's Tachbul is control of Sheikh Lazar, and I heard her, right? Because it relieved.
I guess. What's the problem with Ahurim? It makes me feel good, and I don't do any wrong action. Why isn't it a good outlet? What is the inherent problem with talking to girls? Okay, third question. I think we answered. The Hurim itself are usher. You look in the Shulchan Aruch and it's usher. It's pretty clear as to what we're allowed to look at, what we're allowed to think about, and it's usher. It's in the Shulchan Aruch. What's the problem with the Hurim? I guess we're talking Tami HaMitzvahs. We don't really. Okay, it's usher. That's step one. Yes, it's good to understand why it's usher. The mashal I have is, I was bought a bag of lollipops for a Shabbos treat for my kids. Took them to the store, picked up a bag of lollipops for a Shabbos treat. So my kid is sitting in the back seat and takes the bag out of the shopping bag. So I said, you know, just remember, we're saving those for Shabbos. It's like, okay, Daddy, I just want to hold it. Like, okay, but we're saving it for Shabbos. Then I look in the rearview mirror, and the lollipop bag is open. I said, we're saving it for Shabbos. Okay, fine, I just open the bag. It takes out the lollipop, we're saving it for Shabbos. Okay, I'm just holding the lollipop. The wrapper's off, we're saving it for Shabbos. I'm just smelling it. It's like about to go in his mouth. Sorry, I have to take it away, and now he's crying. So if I was really trying to help him out, I would have just said, no, you can't take it out of the shopping bag. But instead, he ended up torturing himself. So where does this guy want to draw the line? He's having hurim, that's a good outlet, and it's very pleasurable. That's not where he wants to draw the line. In his mind, that might be where he's drawing the line. But he's torturing himself. And he's gonna make it much, much more difficult to control himself from what he actually wants to control himself. And he'd be in a much better position if he wouldn't be having those hurim. Is it a good tachbul to stop masturbating to say to yourself you won't enjoy it when you're older? Is it even true that I'll enjoy more? I assume he meant if I control myself. Let's put it together with this question. Hi, Rabbi, smiley face. Isn't it destructive of the firm communities to create stigmas and eye curtain between girls and boys, thus creating more of a desire to indulge because it's so illegal, so to speak? I'm not sure what should be done. I'm not suggesting mixed schools up to 12th, but many, many people come out normal from mixed up till 8th. Also, we should just chill out about it. Okay, I'll give you a good yesod that I heard from a trapper, and years later I heard this from Dr. Goldman also when he came to speak to the Rebbe about these inyanim. We have to understand the whole Torah perspective over here of how Hashem views these things. At this stage in life, everything is aser, and it seems that when Hashem was creating the world, He said, "Okay, how could I really, really, really torture people? So let me give them this huge, huge taiva, and then I'm going to tell them you can't even think about it. No touching, no looking, no thinking. That's how I'm really going to get them. Good torture. I'll make them sit through. Okay, the best of them will go to Chavetz Chaim, and they're going to wait till they're 24 to get married. So I'm going to make them sit through this torture for over a decade. This is how I'm really going to go about creating the world." That's sort of the impression that we get. There's a Gemara in Nida that says that really the Bris Milah should have been on day 7, Dimyon to Karbonos. I think the Karbonos are allowed to be brought when they're 7 days old. And Mara asks, why wasn't it put on day 7? Why wasn't the Bris Milah on day 7? And the Gemara says, because on day 7, the mother of the baby is usher to her husband, and Hashem didn't want, the Lashon is Shlotiyu Imov Aviv Atzevim Mekulam Smeichim. That Hashem didn't want that at the Bris Milah that the father and mother are going to be sad because they're usher to each other, and everyone else over there is having their bagels, lox, and cream cheese and coffee, and they're all having a good time. They're all happy, but the father and mother are sad because they're usher to each other. Now it's really a pella because, first of all, they don't know who else out there is usher to each other. That's Tom Shmuz that we always think everybody else has it better. But they're getting mutter to each other that night. They're not getting together anyways. They're in the middle of a Bris Milah for their son. And she's going to be able to go to the mikveh that night. Then they're going to be mutter to each other. They're in the middle of a huge simcha. But Hashem senses that shtikl tsar, that Nebuch, this couple, is usher to each other, and he's ready to take the Bris Milah and push it off for every single member of Klal Yisrael. Pushing off a Bris Milah happens to be a chi of kares. If somebody decides, you know, I'd rather have rather do my kids' Bris Milah on Sunday instead of Shabbos, because then my relatives could come. He's chi of kares. So it's a pretty, we're Mechal Shabbos, to have the Bris Milah Bismano. It's a pretty big deal to Hashem to have the Bris Milah Bismano. But he says, you know, I'm going to change the ideal man. And I'm going to make this man a day later because of this slight sensitivity that I realize that people are lacking because they're not mutter to their wife for another 10 hours. That's going to detract from the simcha. So I'm going to push off my Bris Milah. I'm going to push off my inyan to have the Bris Milah on day 7. That's really how Hashem views these things, and taking that all into consideration, He says everything is usher and everything is usher and everything is usher. And it's not because He's trying to torture us. And the reality is that it will enhance our lives. Following the halacha in these areas will enhance our lives. Now, it may be far off in the distance, and for some people, it may not be such a tachula to think about that because it's too far off. But if it helps, good, it helps. But the mitzias is that following these halachos will enable a person to have a much better life when it comes to this area, B'dafka. And there may be a lot of reasons why, but a major reason why is because of the following mitzvahs. How do you create a situation where there's real love? How do you create a real loving relationship?
Absence.
Distance makes the heart grow fonder. Okay. But you have to have something first to be distant from. You don't miss somebody that you never met. But what's how do you create a loving relationship?
Doing something for the other person? Caring for them?
So the basic yisod that that you'll hear from everyone is giving. The more you give to somebody, the more you'll love them. Now, until you have a chance to really give them, Hashem created a stage of infatuation where people date each other, they hang out with each other a little bit, and they fall in love, if we could call it that, even though the extent of the giving was okay. He bought her a Diet Coke on a date or something like that. The extent of the giving throughout the dating period is relatively minimal. Okay, the promise to give may be extensive, and that probably helps, but that really only kicks in once the infatuation is there. But that infatuation is not very long lasting. So Hashem created a dynamic between a man and a woman that, if they follow halacha, will be fantastic for creating that relationship. And that metzius is that Hashem created a very, very powerful physical need for the man and a very powerful emotional need for the woman. And the way the man will get the woman to be interested in reciprocating or in being involved with him physically is by taking care of her emotional needs. And he takes care of her emotional needs, and then she takes care of his physical needs. They both gave to each other in a very, very, very significant way. And the love starts building. The love builds, they give to each other more. And the more they give to each other, the more they love each other. And the hope is that they give to each other and love each other enough that by the time that the infatuation is gone and he's not doing a double take every time he walks into the door, it already grew to the extent that they really love each other. And their relationship could continue growing because they love each other, they'll continue giving, and the physical relationship will continue as well because they actually love each other. And they're expressing their love to each other through the physical relationship. When a person doesn't follow halacha, he loses this teva that Hashem created. Because when a person doesn't follow halacha, so he comes home, his wife is not in the mood, she had a rough day of work, she's dealing with the kvetchy kids. He has a very powerful need. The only way that he might get what he wants is if he really takes care of her. And that's not so easy. So if he's an ish halacha, he has no choice. So Hashem gave him a great incentive, and it's a great incentive. And he's not going to give tremendously and possibly get what he wants, and the love will grow and the relationship will grow. If he's not following halacha, it's a pain in the neck. So why should he go through that process? It could take many hours. He might not even get what he wants. He's going to have to take her for a walk. He's going to have to do the dishes. He's going to have to change a few diapers. It's a pain. So he'll use his other outlets. He'll take out his phone. He'll stop off somewhere on the way home from the office, and he'll do what he needs to do. And he has no incentive to take care of his wife. So he doesn't take care of his wife. He doesn't give to her. She doesn't give back, and the relationship doesn't grow. And he ends up being one of those guys that keep these magazines in business of buying the magazine every month to find another 30 tips to improve his shalom bayis, because the love is not there. So even the physical relationship is not there. You can't have a physical relationship long term with somebody who you don't love. So the reality is, I'm not sure if I explained that well. You could ask me if I didn't. But the reality is that Hashem set up a system for us that if we control ourselves, then we'll be successful. In this area itself of having a loving physical relationship with our wives. Okay, but what does it have to do with when a guy is 15? Because the metzius is that the way we work is we train ourselves. And if from the time that a guy develops his taivas until he gets married, the way he's dealing with his self-control muscles is you have a taiva, you give in, then that's what he's been practicing for the last whatever amount of years. It's not all of a sudden going to switch. And he's not going to develop that relationship, and it's going to affect his physical relationship when he's married. So the reality is, and hopefully the married years are much, much, much longer than the single years, the reality is that if a person does follow the halacha when it comes to not talking to girls, when it comes to controlling the Yetzirah, when it comes to controlling the Hihurim, which often leads to other Yisurim, he's setting himself up to have a very successful, meaningful, loving relationship, which will lead to a very meaningful, loving physical relationship as well, which is what he really wants. He's not really looking for the 2-minute thrill. That's really what he wants, and Hashem, through his halachos and through his restrictions, are really set us up for these things.
So what would you tell a guy who already married himself?
Who was?
Let's say we sort of week before his wedding, married himself, and this is how he lives, and he just hears this about him. So what should he do?
Okay, it's never too late, but I'd wish him luck. I'm saying we never believe that it's too late to change Amida. It gets much more difficult. But he's in a difficult situation. That's the reality. He's in a difficult situation, and he has to he has to do whatever he can.
Isn't it almost luxurious to only be doing this just because she has something that you want?
Yes, it is, but that's not the metzius. I'm not saying that this is his only kavana. Okay, he does love her to a certain extent, and he does want to express that love. He's not just a sick bal taiva taking advantage of his wife, and thereby creating this relationship. There's a lot of other emotions, but they have to grow. They have to get a lot more developed than they are when a person first gets married. There's a halacha we just had in the Gemara. No, that what was it? That the first 30 days. Oh, we had a Gemara, something similar, but there's a halacha by the 9 days, I think by Tisha B'Av, that a kala who got married within 30 days is allowed to wash her face. I would think, okay, they just got married. You have to tell a guy who was married for 30 years already, she better look good, because, right? But that's not the way it works. You need that attraction more in the beginning. Once you give to each other enough, the real love is there, and it's not so dangerous if she doesn't wash her face in Tisha B'Av. But before the real love kicks in, this has to build on itself in order to really develop the relationship.
That's what they mean by tool.
I don't know if you agree with this. I asked somebody, let's say some guy, he lost sensitivity towards, like, say, like, he needs to be, like, really, really, like, turned on or whatever. Like, he totally lost sensitivity throughout the years. So I asked the person, so can you gain sensitivity back? And this Rebbe told me, he said that it's possible for him to gain sensitivity, but it, like, he says you can go like a 5-year period of just like going sharp or something like that.
I would never say such a thing. It's devastating to tell a person such a thing. What does that mean? That you can't make any progress? Let's say he goes 1 year. He didn't make any progress.
I don't know what I was going to say. So I'm saying, if someone is like that, is it possible to gain sensitivity back?
Yes. There's therapy that a person could undergo for the new disease that's called PID, pornography-induced erectile dysfunction. And there's therapy that a person could actually undergo to deal with that, but it's, I don't know what it is. I can't get the therapy. There are ways of dealing with these things, of changing the mindset, but it's very difficult. Somebody was asking about the dangers of getting involved in these things. We don't really like focusing on the dangers. After I was teaching here for a couple of years, I went back to Queens. I was there for Shabbos, and I went to Shmuel's Derbe Trapper, and I was shmuzing with him, and he was telling about this new sefer that came out. I forgot the name of the sefer that a lot of guys in Yeshiva were into, But it said he's not into the Sefer. He's not advising people to read the Sefer because there's one chapter in that Sefer that talks about the Chomer Achet. So I said, I hear, but at least tell the Rabbeim to read it and they'll be able to realize the severity of the issue and they'll be machazit the guys to deal with it. So he says to me, and who says their Rabbeim can handle it? I said, okay, fine, let's move on. But the message I got over there is that it's not, we don't like focusing on the detriment of being nishal. It's not positive. We're not in that Lu Yitzor world where these things don't affect us. We don't focus on the negative. We focus on the positive.
And the practical negative, like you just said, practical negative. You just said prayer would be messed up.
But there are ways to deal with it. You get the proper help. You got to change your mindset. And yes, it does put you at a disadvantage, but it doesn't mean that you're devastated for life unless you clean for 5 years. Like, I would never tell it to a person. I would say that you should talk to somebody, work on it, try and change the mindset, change the perspective, and you can make progress and you'll have a better life. Like, what do you need to tell them that unless you go 5 years straight clean, like you're going to be done? Like, what? So who told you? Like. All right, everybody, so we'll hold it here and to be continued, hopefully. Shkayach.